Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. This is Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest and partner, John Dedon. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Wayne. It's great to be here.
I know you're an experienced radio announcer. You've been on the on various shows in the past, and John is going to be a recurring guest on Blueprint for Wealth for the foreseeable future. I mean, at least once a month, we're going to have him on talking about estate planning, estate taxes, gift taxes, transfer taxes, death, and all kinds of exciting topics like that. John is a principal with the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, and he is in the Trust Estate and Tax Planning Practice Group. He is involved in highly complex structuring techniques such as creating family limited partnerships, irrevocable trusts, dynasty trusts, cryonic preservation trusts. We have to talk about that on one of these shows. And he's been quoted extensively in newspapers throughout the country, including the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the Chicago Tribune. And you can read about John's exploits on DedonOnEstatePlanning.typepad.com, which is a regularly updated discussion of estate planning topics that John publishes on his blog at least once a week, right?
I try to. That's a good goal.
That's a good goal. Well, today we're going to be talking about things that happened at the end of 2010 in the estate planning world. First of all, John, what happened in the estate world at the end of 2010?
Well, Wayne, it certainly wasn't boring, and it was quite a shock, as you know, as you work in this area as well. But we came to the end of December. And most of us in this estate world thought that we would have an exemption amount of only $1 million, which is what the law called for if Congress did not act, or perhaps a $3.5 million exemption amount, which is what the amount was in 2009.
Right.
And by exemption amount, I mean the amount that you can protect from tax upon your death. Well, in any event, Congress surprised us, as did the president. And they passed a $5 million exemption amount, which means now if you are married and do the proper planning, you get the benefit of protecting $10 million from estate tax. If you're single, it's only $5
million. Only $5 million.
So as you say, that does cover most of us.
It's something like, I've read that it's, the statistic is something like 98% of the U.S. population will be exempt from death tax, at least at the federal level.
I've always wondered about that statistic, Wayne, because it seems like there'd be virtually nobody that would be subject to estate tax when you apply those percentages. But I think when you're in the D.C. area or in New York or Boston, Chicago, you find that there are a lot of taxpayers who certainly need our help.
Now, what happened in 2010 was that they enacted this law at the end of the year. What does that mean for people who actually passed away during 2010? Is the estate tax completely gone in 2010? Or what did Congress do with respect to the 2010 estate taxes that could have been imposed or should have been imposed?
Well, that was another surprise because all through 2010, there was no estate tax. And we were waiting for the proverbial shoe to drop and to have Congress retroactively impose an estate tax. Well, it did not happen. And I think by last count, there were about six billionaires who died in 2010 without having to pay estate tax. Probably the most notable one is George Steinbrenner.
Right.
If not for the elimination of the estate tax for that one year, who knows whether the Yankees would have been able to stay in the Steinbrenner family. So in any event, Congress actually did two things. They said we will still allow decedents to pass without any estate tax, or we will allow an exemption amount of $5 million for decedents in 2010. So there's an option. In some cases, depending on the net worth, it may be better to elect that there is estate tax, but you're under the $5 million amount. And for the very wealthy, there's no estate tax, period.
Right. And I think the decision point there, isn't that based on whether or not you can step up the basis of the assets in the estate? So if your estate is under $5 million, like most people who passed away in 2010, you could elect into the estate tax and elect to have all of the assets stepped up to full fair market value. Whereas if you did not elect into the estate tax, then you'd be subject to this strange modified carryover basis rule that allows you to step up some of the assets, but not all the assets.
Right. As generous as Congress is, there's a no free lunch, and they were going to get you one way or the other, either on the estate side or on the income tax side. But as a bottom line, again, in 2010, as people joked throughout the year, that was the year to die.
And it also applies for the generation skipping transfer tax. If somebody leaves an asset to a grandchild or a great-grandchild, we have this tax that still exists that imposes the highest level of tax rate, which right now is 35%, right, because they lowered the tax rate, on transfers that are two or more generations. What happened in 2010 with this generation skipping transfer tax?
Well, there is actually an opportunity to do some GST planning where you could create a trust and make the gifts and really continue in perpetuity with estate tax-free assets. And it's actually a good segue now into 2011 as well, because even though it's not unlimited, the GST exemption in 2011 and 2012 is that same $5 million amount. And it provides for extraordinary opportunities for the wealthy to do their planning over the next 2 years.
So, in other words, they can move and gift significant amounts of assets, up to $5 million per person, per donor, during their lifetime, and escape the generation skipping tax that would be imposed on gifts to grandkids. Is that right?
Exactly. And I think that's where people like us will be spending a lot of our time advising clients and determining whether, in fact, we should take advantage of those gifting rules. Because, Wayne, one of the things that we didn't get to yet is the bad news.
What's the bad news?
Well, the bad news is this may not go on forever. In fact, the law itself is only for 2 years.
Oh, come on. You mean they're not going to just keep the $5 million exemption in place forever and ever and ever?
Well, we're going to come to the end of 2012, and it's going to be similar to what we dealt with at the end of 2010. We're going to be speculating whether Congress is able to get their act together and provide some certainty by continuing with a law that people can plan on. Or if they don't, for whatever reason, whether it be the politics or deficits, whatever it may be, if they don't act, then we know by default we are back to $1 million exemption amount in 2013. And Wayne, you mentioned a 35% tax bracket. If we go to the $1 million exemption amount in 2013, we're back to a maximum of a 55% tax bracket, which, when you explain that to clients, they kind of gasp, and they're not sure they're hearing you correctly.
They gasp, their jaws drop, they say, ouch, they say, how do we prevent that? You know, it's interesting, if we do our planning over the next 2 years to take advantage of these higher exemptions, what will happen if the exemptions drop back down to $1 million after 2012? Will they just tax those gifts that were made in the years of 2011 and 2012, will they be recaptured in the estates later on? There's some questions out there that we can't answer yet. We just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think the view that people believe, certainly that we would like to believe, is that there would not be what's called a clawback. That, in other words, if you made the gifts, mm-hmm, and you made a gift at a $5 million amount and we can only protect $1 million because it's 2013, are you going to be subject to tax on the $4 million that exceeds the $1 million exemption? And I think what people speculate is that you would not be, but of course Congress can do what they wish. It's interesting, there's a provision in the new law that provides that you would not be subject to the clawback, but that provision is set to sunset at the end of
2012.
Exactly. Yeah. So it creates some uncertainty. But I think on balance, again, for the high net worth, they're going to be looking at doing some gifts now while the opportunity is out there. And it would be because of not only the $5 million exemption amount, it would be for the same reasons that we've been advising those clients to do so in the last couple of years, which is depressed values,
right,
as well as a low interest rate environment.
Which is, it's the perfect storm for making these intra-family gifts, and they haven't changed any of the laws relating to that, even though they've proposed changes in those areas. They haven't changed the law. So it does, it is a perfect storm for making these gifts in family limited partnerships, LLCs, closely held companies, appreciated assets, you name it. There's lots of opportunity, and for charitable planning too as well.
Exactly, and it's that type of planning that's been keeping us busy. And that we're now weighing the pros and cons of right now. You know, you mentioned that Congress has considered tightening some of these strategies that we use.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting too technical, we've seen it with tools such as a grantor-retained annuity trust. We've seen it in an area where it would affect a lot more of the planning, and that is it eliminating discounting within intra-family transfers. But as of now, those opportunities are still there.
So we've been talking a little bit about planning for the wealthy. What about for everybody else that is out there that's listening to the show that isn't necessarily a high net worth individual? Don't we still need to do our estate planning?
Well, it's funny you bring that up because as many high net worth people that there are out there, what I really find in the day-to-day planning, it's making sure that you take care of the basics. And the basics in estate planning are typically starting with wills, powers of attorney, medical directives. Now, oftentimes, as part of that, there will be a revocable trust that will go with those tools. But the point is, they're fundamental planning issues that you need to address, and things such as probate avoidance through revocable trusts and simply focusing on how your assets pass upon your death are very important factors.
Yeah, and it's not just how they're going to pass, but it's also thinking about the next generation and how to protect them from themselves and from their creditors and their predators too, right? So building in protections in your wills, in your trusts, that might necessarily keep the assets in trust for a little bit longer than they otherwise would be. And well, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting because whether clients have 100,000 or over a million, it's fundamental when I bring up, are you concerned that the assets you're leaving to your children may end up with your former daughter-in-law or son-in-law? And I point out there's an easy way to address that, and that's simply by having a trust where each child could even be their own trustee.
Right.
So it's almost a cake and eat it too approach. You could provide at your death, the inheritance passes to your children. Each child has a trust. They're in charge of their own trust. But now we've segregated those assets and protected them in the event of a failed divorce. So Wayne, that's a great example that you bring up where there's planning opportunities that have nothing to do with estate tax, but simply are necessary to make sure your wealth is preserved.
And so it's not just building in these protections in the documents. There are other aspects to estate planning that require our input, such as designating beneficiaries on retirement plans. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that's one of the more complex areas because when you look at beneficiary designations, there's also often an income tax advantage that you have with a 401k or with a 401k that's been rolled over to an IRA.
Right.
So here's an example. Husband dies. The beneficiary of an IRA is his spouse. Well, his wife has the advantage of stretching that out by rolling it into her own IRA. On the other hand, what if it's a second marriage? What if he's concerned that that IRA could end up with her children instead of his?
Right.
Then it introduces perhaps the need for a trust where she could still benefit, but it would not go to her directly.
Right.
Well, if you opt for that plan, it may eliminate her ability to take it out over her lifetime through her own IRA. So we're looking to balance different aspects. And as you point out, when you get into some of this planning, it becomes a bit complicated.
And it's perfect timing because we're running out of time today. It's been 15 minutes, and you know we've learned so much about estate planning from John Dedon, our special guest. John, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they contact you at Odin Feldman & Pittleman?
Well, you can always simply Google Odin Feldman & Pittleman. You can Google John Dedon. You can call at 703-218-2131. And Wayne, they can always call you because I'd be remiss if I didn't say how delighted we are at Odin Feldman and Pittleman that you're now one of our partners.
Well, thank you. And what a great way to end the show. Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth. And join us next week for another special topic and special guest. And stay tuned, because John will be on again as a repeated guest in the future. Thank you very much.